Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Yes, here's John Stanko. I know the world has been waiting with bated breath for my unveiling and appearing today. Hardly. But anyway, it is still good to be here with you. I know I am in the right place at the right time, doing what it is that God wants me to do, and that is a fantastic feeling. And we're going to talk to somebody in just a few minutes who I think has the same feeling. My friend Susan Kantz, who is the founder of In the Light Ministry, is also the developer and founder of Everyday Missions Jewelry. But we're going to talk about In the Light, and we're going to talk about Everyday Missions Jewelry, but mostly we're going to talk about Sue's love affair with the Kenyan nation and with many of the people there. And Sue is a valued partner and friend, and so a very good example for you who are listening of purpose and the steps that you can take, the steps that you should take or have to take in order to see your purpose being expressed and fulfilled. And Susan is an excellent example of this. And so she was away last week. I wanted to have her on then, but we set the dates, or I do, so far in advance. A couple weeks ago, I thought, oh, that'll be in 2 weeks. And before you know it, it's here. And that's because in my life, anyway, the days are so full. I got up at 5:11 this morning, and I was at my desk by 5:30. And after the show, which we're recording at noontime, I will have a bite of lunch, and then I'll take a quick rest, and I will be back at my desk and probably be here till about 9 o'clock tonight. Now, why am I telling you this? I'm not trying to gain sympathy. I love it. And that's how it's been since March the 15th when I came off the road. And I was talking on Facebook Live today about the verse in 1 Corinthians 16:9, God has opened an effective door of ministry, of service. And so he closed the door of travel, and he opened the door of social media and publishing and writing and connecting with people and this blog radio and my online creativity classes that I'm teaching. Those are all open doors. And so I ran through them. And somebody asked me this morning, they want to go to Kenya with me the next time I go. I said, well, they haven't even opened the airports, so I'm not even thinking about that. I'm not pining away or yearning for it, although I do stay in close connection with our partners, and of course, through your generous support, I've been able to support them on a monthly basis, and so I'm grateful for that. So it's not like I am done with them, it's just a different expression. But my point was just how fast the days go, because I have filled them with meaningful and purposeful work. How was my Father's Day? My Father's Day was the same schedule I just described to you. I got up, I was at my desk, took a break in the afternoon, came back, did more work, had a really big breakthrough on a project I've been working through in about a year and a half, just trying to figure out how to position it, how to do it. Then I had the Creativity Online class last night. It was so fantastic. I felt like I was a spectator at a testimony service where people were sharing after only 2 weeks how their creativity is being released and renewed, and I just felt like I was there to be a cheerleader and encourage them in what they were doing. So now I get to do it all over again today, and it just doesn't get any better than this. So I did mention the creativity classes, and this has stirred my thinking that I need to have some online purpose classes going. And I put it on Facebook on Saturday. I'm still getting responses today. About 75 people have said they are interested, and that's more than I can handle. So I'm just praying through how exactly to do this. And I think, first of all, I'm going to send all 75 people a message to say, download my Purpose Quest International mobile app that is free of charge. And there is a six-part, one-hour series, 10 minutes each of the six parts, that is finding your purpose. Start there. And then I think I'm going to have a Saturday morning and a Sunday evening class. I am going to charge tuition. But the app will be for those who can't afford it. But then I think I'm going to go to Facebook today and try and raise some money between now and the end of the year for scholarships, or not end of the year, end of the month, for scholarships for those who I know in Nigeria and other places cannot release the funds or can't get the funds over here. And so that's kind of where my thinking is today. I'll keep you posted on that. But if you're interested, drop me an email, johnstanko@gmail.com. I'll put you on the list. They'll probably be starting about the third week of July. They will go for 4 weeks, and that some of that may be adjusted and change as we go along. So I will keep you posted. And so in just a couple of minutes, we're going to bring Sue on. Right now, I just want to follow through on our tradition of reading a psalm to towards the beginning of the show. And for 7 or 8 weeks, we did Psalm 91. We have now moved on from Psalm 91. I just read Psalm 110 in the Facebook Live, and I did Psalm 110 on my show last Friday. So it's time for you, the radio audience, to move on to Psalm 111 that says, "Praise the Lord. I will extol the Lord with all my heart, in the council of the upright and in the assembly. Great are the works of the Lord. They are pondered by all who delight in them. Glorious and majestic are his deeds, and his righteousness endures forever. He has caused his wonders to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and compassionate. He provides food for those who fear him. He remembers his covenant forever. He has shown his people the power of his works, giving them the lands of other nations. The works of his hands are faithful and just. All his precepts are trustworthy. They are established forever and ever, enacted in faithfulness and uprightness. He provided redemption for his people. He ordained his covenant forever. Holy and awesome is his name. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All who follow his precepts have good understanding. To him belongs eternal praise." Well, that's pretty short and straightforward. The psalmist said he was going to extol the Lord with all his heart in the council of the upright, and that was going to be a public worship time, and then he was describing for us what exactly he was going to say and why he was extolling the Lord as he was. And we're going to bring somebody on right now who has written a few lyrics in her day as well. And I want to welcome Susan Kantz to Wake Up to Purpose. Sue, I'm so glad to have you on the show today.
Hello, Dr. John. How are you?
I am doing very well, thank you. God treats me better than I deserve. And I know you're doing well. Tell our listeners where you were last week and why you were there and what you were doing.
Well, last week was another bike ride. I've ridden many long trail bike rides. I don't do road riding. My husband does that. But I've put about 10,000 miles on my bike. And we've done Pittsburgh to D.C. and long 350-mile trips like that. And last week was a little bit different. I wasn't on my bicycle. I was doing all the road support for my friends who ride with me. They rode from Cincinnati to Cleveland, Ohio. It took them 6 days, and I got to kind of take on a different role, something I've never done before, and I really enjoyed it, really enjoyed being able to road support, help them with lunches, and greet and set their course for the day, tell them their directions, anything specific coming up they need to look for, traffic problems, etc., and then bring them healthy lunches, and then we all get to be together and enjoy the evenings after they get off the bikes. So that was my that was my week last week. Yeah.
Why the road support? Why the switching of roles?
Well, my husband and I were both supposed to ride this trail, but he has not been feeling well. And so since he couldn't ride and we had kind of back in the spring canceled our plans to do this trip. I had also thought I would not ride because he wasn't riding. And then I became available to just kind of come alongside and support them. So I thought, yeah, let's try something new. And it makes for a much more comfortable ride for the bikers. So, yeah.
Well, so it's really practical service. I mean, we're hearing servant leadership right here on Wake Up to Purpose. But why am I not surprised? Because that is the role you take so often in the time that I have known you. Sue, tell our listeners a little bit about Susan Kantz, who you are, and bring us up to the present time, and then we'll go back and fill in some of the details.
Well, I have many purposes in my life. God's brought me to be a wife. I've been married 30 years this year, and a mother of two. I have a daughter, Abigail, and a son, Adam. And I have a ministry, in the light ministry, which in its inception, maybe back in 2002 or 2003, it was a Christian music band, and I'm the lead singer, and I spent many years singing and enjoying that, and we would donate all of our proceeds to buy instruments for kids who have a talent but don't have the resources, and we did that for many years. And then I met you, went to Kenya, and things started to change, and we just kind of followed God's lead there, and that's changed now to become orphan care instead of just music. So, I have that. I have started in the last year a business called Everyday Mission Jewelry, and 100% of those proceeds benefit the Orphans of Kenya also. That is where my heart is right now. That is where God would have me do work. Many people ask me why Kenya, and I say, why not? That's what God introduced me to, and that's where my heart is. So that's where I serve.
Talk to us about your music journey. I mean, what led up to In His Light, and how did you become involved in that, and what happened along the way to encourage you, and how did you express your music? Was it writing? Was it singing? Was it both? Was it playing? Just talk to us about your music journey.
Sure. I think many years ago in high school and in college, I was very musical, and I played instruments, and I sang mostly, did a lot of musical theater, and then moved to community, musical theater after and in college and things like that. And so I was always very interested. And when I got married, moved away from home, life kind of changed, and it kind of went by the wayside for many years. But I always loved singing. And my grandfather really taught me to sing. I never had an official lesson ever, but he was at one point an opera singer long before I was born, who developed growths on his vocal cords, and so he could no longer sing. I never heard him sing a note, but he would whistle, and we would sit on his front porch swing. Fond memories for me of sitting with my grandfather, and he would teach me to sing from the diaphragm, not through your nasal cavity. So I had very, very informal training, but loved every minute of it. So I kind of took that and would sing in church when I got a chance here and there. But a friend of mine came to me, and her husband played guitar in our church and said he would love to play and kind of doesn't want to do it by himself. The two of you should do something. And so we started this small little group in our church, and then it went from, instead of just church services, we went to small coffee houses for the couples of the church, a chance to get out and socialize and enjoy some Christian music. And from there it grew and grew to not only be in our church but to many other churches and bigger community events. And so for about 15 years I sang lead vocals. I have always aspired to write a song, but at this point have not done so. And that music carried on when I met Dr. John Stanko and went to Kenya. And when we're there with the children and traveling to the school and orphanages, I had the music program.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Susan Kantz, who is the founder of the nonprofit organization In the Light, and also recently launched a line of jewelry called Everyday Missions Jewelry. We're going to get to that in just a moment. But tell our listeners how we met, under what circumstances, and how God used it.
At the time, I was executive director of Christians United in Beaver County, and they asked me to go to a leadership conference once a month for a few months, and I went, and you were the speaker, and I was listening to everything you had to say and taking notes, and I could not come up with how to apply it to my professional position at the time. I was their only employee, and there was a board of directors and myself, and so I couldn't quite understand who I was supposed to be leading. I didn't know. I just was very confused. But the whole time I sat and listened to you, I kept thinking of our ministry of music, In the Light, which at that point was not a 501c3 nonprofit yet. But that's where it kept applying to me. And so we spoke a few times about Kenya after you would talk about leadership. And I got very interested, knowing that we had the ability to come alongside and kind of support an idea that was happening in one of your libraries. In the library in Banana, Kenya, there is a pastor, Peter Kiongi, who wanted to expand and do some music for the community in that library. And that is where God said, this is where I want you to step in here and help and contribute. And so we bought 6 guitars, a sound system. My son is a musician, so his first drum set got packed up in the shipment, and all of it got sent over, and so a small music program started, which is now turned into a music school. So that's how that all moved along. But we met while you were doing a leadership conference.
Yes, and that leadership conference was a monthly event that was for an organization, Leaders Serving Beaver County. And I remember I would have to get up. I made a commitment to do it once a month for like 7 months, and I had to get up at 6 a.m. Well, not get up. I had to be on the road at 6 a.m. and be up there and about 50 miles away and set everything up. And I believe you came to me at the last session. I can still see you standing over to the side, and Cheryl Bradbury and Sharon White were there that morning, I believe.
Yes.
And so, yes, and you were standing very patiently, and you said, I don't think you went that year. I think you went the next year. Didn't you give me some CDs to take over the first year, or am I getting that confused?
I did give you some CDs to take, but I did end up going on the next trip. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, talk. I still remember that morning. I can still see you. And again, one of these, who is this woman? I sure will be glad to talk to you. And now you're a fixture in my life. And I can't think of doing what we're doing without your involvement. Talk to our listeners about the decision to go to Kenya, the trip, and then the experience of being there for the first time.
Well, it was a very unique experience for me. I was sitting listening to you, and you were sharing that particular day about Kenya. You know, you had shared about leadership for many months, and this was your last day, and you brought along your friends, Cheryl and Sharon, and they were there to support all the information for Kenya. And I heard God so clearly that day, like I have never heard him before. And he said, I want you to go sing with these kids. I didn't know anything about Kenya. It had never been on a bucket list of mine, not in my heart, on my radar, ever in my life. I heard it so clearly, I literally turned around as if someone was standing behind me. who said that? And I knew right then and there that I had to walk up to you and talk to you and figure out what this was all about. And so I did just that. It was something that was very out of my comfort zone. Traveling internationally, I had done very little of at that point. I've done much more since then. but I do love to travel. That part was very interesting and within character. But my family has never traveled, and so I came home to tell my husband and my kids, I think I'm going to go to Kenya. I'm going to go to Kenya in the spring. And my husband said, what? Explain this to me. And so I sat down and told him what had happened, and he has been 100% supportive ever since. He's been all on board to support what God has in store. So my family of origin, not quite so supportive. They struggled to understand why I would travel and do this when it seemed out of the blue to them. And they were very fearful, very, very fearful. And I have to say, I really was very confident. I knew you had a lot of experience. I felt like I was in the right place doing the right thing. And it felt wonderful to go. And the experience itself of being there was shocking and wonderful and all at the same time. I had never experienced a third world country, a developing country like Kenya, and so I learned an awful lot. But while there, God met me every step of the way to show me and confirm that I was doing exactly what he had asked me to do, and to open doors and set relationships on a path that I knew I would be coming back for as long as he'll let me.
Yeah. So again, drill down a little deeper. I mean, what was so shocking? What was so wonderful? What did you see and behold? What were the surprises? What was the unexpected that happened, or the expected that even took on a larger impact than you had expected?
I think the developing country, being an American who's raised, growing up, we certainly did not have money, and my family struggled to pay bills and to budget very strictly in order to make ends meet. My dad was a used car salesman. My mom groomed dogs in our basement. So we were by no means financially stable when I was growing up. However, even having that experience here in the United States is in no way comparable to the poverty level in a developing country like Kenya. So that was very shocking to me. Very shocking at the level that we take for granted here in the United States. We take for things like running water and police protection, that when you have trouble, you can call the police, the fire department. Those things are established. When you lose your job, you have unemployment and you have food pantries, all these things that you just take for granted when you have no other experience. And then to go to that country and to see how people function without any of those supports, it was a really, really deeply moving and learning experience. And for me, the thing that really was, and it still is I just completely fell in love with the children, particularly the orphans, who have so very little, and yet find joy every day to smile and want to play with you and want to spend time with you and connect with you. And that is definitely where my heart is. And loving them is what motivates me to do everything I do here in the United States.
Yeah. So we go back, you donate musical instruments and the drum kit and sound system, and but it was toward a specific reason. You were building something. Talk to us about, you make your first trip, which a lot of people do, and they come home and they say the same things. I'm impacted, I saw such poverty. But you came home and did something. Talk to us more about that and what vision you had around the whole word that God gave you, that you were to go and sing with the children, do music with the children.
after my first trip, I came home and I just knew that there was more work there to do. I didn't have the original vision. Pastor Peter had the original vision of a music school. And it just really spoke to my heart. And I knew that that community and the children in particular there needed encouragement and hope. And music is the universal language. You know, it can bring you out of such depths of despair. It can move you emotionally in ways that you just can't always predict. And so music to me is a wonderful, wonderful tool God uses to heal and to inspire. So when I came home, I brought the message that it's the music program. We saw the instruments. No, I guess that was the second year. Okay, I've been going too many years. I'm getting my years mixed up.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
The first year, the musical instruments were to be shipped but did not arrive by the time we had gone. So I knew that, you know, I felt like I really wanted to go back and continue that work, that they would be there the next year. And so I brought it to the band, and so we started raising funds and talking with Pastor Peter about raising enough money to build a music school. And so in 2016, we started raising funds, and in 2017, in February, the school was complete. And it is a very small little building that sits behind the John Stanko Library in Banana, Kenya, and they use it for lessons of all kinds of instruments. We've sent over some keyboards, but we've now learned that it's also much more efficient to raise funds and send the funds so that they can get instruments in Nairobi and things. So there are keyboards and guitars and flutes and saxophones and all kinds of instruments for the community to come in and take lessons, and also kind of almost check them out like a library book and take them to their praise bands in their churches and play music there. And so it expands. And now it has expanded. On this last trip, I learned not only to the music school, but it's expanded into the public local schools. They're going in and teaching music lessons in the schools. So that is how that all kind of moved from a vision of a music program into an actual music school that's doing incredibly well and getting more and more popular every year.
Yeah. And what's the name of the school?
They surprised me with the name. And when it opened in 17, I didn't know until the day what the name was going to be. I assumed it would be In the Light Music School. Because that's where the funds were raised, through the nonprofit. But I walked around the corner, and it says in big bold letters, Sue's Melody Music School is what they named it. I was shocked.
So what was it like that day that you turned around the corner and we're there to have sort of an opening or a dedication or at least a viewing? And What did that say to you? What did it do to you? What did it mean when you saw that?
It was quite overwhelming, and it was very hard for me to accept. I hadn't been raised in a way that I had a healthy sense of who I am and confidence, self-image, and so that's... Those are things I have had to really work on for many years of my adult life, to kind of unlearn what I was taught. And because I was taught it at such a young age, it's taken me many years, and I still have to work very hard at learning who I am in Christ and standing in that, not what I've learned on this earth as, you know, as a young girl and a young woman. And so to come around the corner and see my name on a school in Kenya felt very, on one hand, wrong, because I hadn't personally donated that money. That money came from many people here in the United States. So it felt like I was getting credit for something that wasn't just about me. I also have a hard time when attention is brought to me personally. And so it was an honor, and at the same time, inwardly, it was a lot of conflict, a lot of conflict. And so it was a wonderful honor to see how successful and to see how God had used these pieces from all over the world to bring this program together in Banana. And so I was really celebrating that and incredibly thankful for that. But inwardly, it was a tough day. It was a tough day.
Yeah, it was. I was there. I saw it. And, you know, it is a journey, and it's why I talk so much about trying to reverse that whole mentality that we've been taught not to draw attention to yourself, that, you know, if you talk about anything but Jesus, then you're probably in sin, or, you know, about to step into sin. And I just don't think God is threatened. I think he shares some glory with those whose hearts are his, and your heart is certainly in the right place. But now, we talk about the Banana Library and your music school, which is, you know, Nairobi area, about a 40-minute drive from city center. But that's not your only expression of ministry in Kenya. Talk to us about what else you have done.
Well, Since in the Light has stepped back on music and moved forward on orphan care, you took me to the mountains of Bomet, which is roughly 6-7 hours from Nairobi, to the top of a mountain where there is no running water, no electricity, and an orphanage called Kenduiwa. And I had visited there many times, and every time we would visit and go back year after year for about 4 years, I just kept feeling stronger and stronger that there's some real work here for me to do. Very unsure of what that would look like or any direction or plan, but I just really kept following my heart. And I, Kenduiwa is definitely my heart in Kenya. There are approximately 70 orphans who live there, and they feel like my children. I've spent a lot of time there in the last couple of years, and I know many of the children by name, not all of them yet. Sometimes they're not all there. Sometimes they're away at school and things like that. But Pastor David Kolech and his wife manage with his family and his sons to take care of all of the orphans. And we have worked very hard. God's brought us some great opportunities to really try to make a difference in those kids' lives over the last 2 years. So we have had several fundraisers to buy them new beds, new bedding, flooring, help with a tea field that needed replanted so that someday it can be a great source of income for the children, to help them just, raise enough money every month to feed 70 children, you know, not to mention clothes and things they need for school, et cetera, you know. And most recently, there is a school on the property started by by Kenduiwa that is an elementary school. And so we were able to financially help them improve the school. And just this spring, they named the school In the Light Mission School. So that was a wonderful dedication time this spring.
Talk to our listeners. You said the bedding and such. Talk about the conditions. I mean, we're talking again 72, 74 orphans, about 18 or high school age. So you have 50 plus children who are in this compound, and it's on a steep hill. And so talk to us about what you beheld there, how they were existing and living, and then specifically what it was that you did to try and alleviate some of their discomfort.
It's hard for most Americans to really understand hunger. It really is. As I go and I talk to people, it's just a very difficult concept for us. There is food everywhere in America. It's at our gas stations, it's everywhere, and it's not the case in Kenya. And so these children eat one meal a day. They'll go to school, they'll have a cup of tea or chai, which is tea with milk. So they do get a little bit of protein there from the milk and a cup of chai. They'll have one bowl of porridge, ugali, which is like a corn. It's corn and dried and ground and made into a cereal. So they will eat that for a meal and have another cup of chai in the afternoon. And that is a pretty common day for the kids. One meal, and it's usually just porridge. Now, they will, on occasion, have beans and rice and maybe something like that. Rarely meat, but they will have beans and some vegetables or things occasionally. So that reality alone was just really difficult. My mother's heart just has a very hard time swallowing that pill of reality. Mm-hmm. And when you see the two rooms, the two small buildings that are their dorms, the girls have one. The floors were very, they were cement, but very, very chipped up, very, very rough. The beds were metal frames, very old. And mattresses, not all of the kids had mattresses. Some of them had blankets kind of folded over to kind of sleep on. And not every child gets their own bed. There's just not enough room. And so sometimes they'd have two or even three to a small, even a little bit smaller than our twin-size mattress. And that's how they sleep and function. And they have no running water. And so they go to the bottom of the mountain and they fill up a tank from the river and they bring it up and they use that as their running water. So there are no shower houses or any of those kinds of facilities. The bathrooms are very, very primitive, and they have a wonderful cook who's been with them for years, who spends her days over a wood-burning stove cooking, you know, the porridge and things for the children. And the conditions are very difficult. They do have a solar panel that powers a light or two, but those are not in the dorms. Those are like up in the main dining hall area. That is also pretty rustic. And what else can I tell you about the conditions? They're rough, and the kids have one set of clothes for the week, and they have usually one dress for church. That's the clothes that they own. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and next to their bed is a footlocker, but even there, not everybody had a footlocker. That represents all their worldly possessions. And so, talk about what you did with the bedding. What did you decide to do?
So in the light, had a few fundraisers and reached out to our friends and family and brought home the reality, the pictures, to show that this is what the children are sleeping on and this is what the children eat. And they you know, we need to improve the everyday conditions for these kids. And so we raised enough funds to buy, well, we went to our friends at Lutheran, who is a Lutheran church camp in outside of Butler, and I had worked with them buying guitars and things for them many years ago. I worked at Lutheran. My daughter worked at Lutheran as a camp counselor, so it's a special place in my heart for Lutheran. We came to them and said, can we partner together? Is there a way we can work together? And they stepped right up to the plate and said, put me in, coach. They were ready to go. So they asked all of their campers and all of their camper families to donate. And so the kids have the opportunity, when they bring a little bit of spending money to camp, to buy candy bars and pop and things at the store, at the end of the week to donate, or they could donate any time during the week what they wanted to do for the kids. And we took pictures up and made a big display in their dining hall so the children could not only just have the opportunity to give, but learn. We wanted them to really learn what it was like. As much as we could, give them a taste of the experience of other children around the world. So my daughter and I went up and we did a presentation to all of the counselors about what the children's lives were like. And we worked out a little when they do candlelight time at the end of every night. So just a quiet moment where the counselors in each cabin like talk to the kids about something. And they used to use that time to talk about Kanduyiwa children and what their lives were like. And they would put a mattress on the floor and say, okay, let's have two or three of you come and lay on this. What would it be like every night to lay on this bed? You're used to having a bed all to yourself. What would it be like if you had to share this bed? You know, what would it be like if you only had one meal a day? And it was that was a very important part of this campaign to me, to have the children have this opportunity to learn, not just to give. That's great, and that's wonderful, and it's useful, and it's how, you know, these beds were these new beds, you know, were purchased and everything, but it was really important for them to learn. So we did that, and together we raised $6,000 to buy all new bunk beds, all new mattresses, and all of the bedding for all of the children at Kanduyiwa. So we called our dear friend Pauline and Gigi in Kenya, who is not only our travel agent but dear sister, and she helped us organize all the logistics of having these beds made in Kenya. It was important not to just ship things over. We wanted everything to contribute to their economy. So they were made in Kenya, in Nairobi, shipped out to the mountains, and set up just in time for a visit. I was there in the fall, and I got to cut the ribbon and watch those sweet children run in and jump on their new beds. Overjoyed. And each child now has their own bed.
Yeah. It's the conditions that they were in, and nobody complained, and they didn't ask us to do this. You saw the need, and you took the steps to do it. And of course, the boys have blue iron or metal frame beds, and the girls have pink frame, and it's really quite sweet. And then you did some renovations, put the new floor in. We were there in February, and it just looked fantastic. And our thanks to Luther Land and, you know, all the partners who helped make it happen. But thanks especially to you, who spearheaded the project, and you know, the Lord bless you for that. I want to ask you one more question, and we'll move on to the jewelry. But talk about the tea field and why that was so important, and what role it will play in the life of the orphanage and the children there.
So on the property, there is a 5-acre field that had been previously planted with tea. But because of weather conditions, and also because of just not being educated in planting and in the tea industry, it was not successful, and so it needed replanted. And the managers had really learned a lot about a better way to plant, what time to plant. And so we also were able to raise funds and able to purchase enough tea seedlings to plant those 5 acres. And like I said, some were already established, but very little of the 5 acres was productive. Now, in a couple of years, it will take at least 2 years, possibly three, before the tea is strong enough and big enough and healthy enough to be picked regularly to provide an income monthly, not only to pay for the workers to pick it and, you know, harvest and also tend it throughout the year, but to supply enough income for the orphans to be fed every month. So that is that will be a wonderful, wonderful resource for them in the future.
Yeah, and it's David has explained to me. David is an overseer in the World Gospel Churches there that are throughout the region, and the churches do what they can for the orphans. He had told me 1 year I was there in October, they bring beans and firewood and you know, things that will last them for 4 months or so. But the other 8 months, they're on their own. and they are trusting the Lord. And so our partners, and you've certainly helped with this. I've been sending them money every month during the pandemic, as well as to some of our other partners at Dr. Stanko Academy and Pastor Peter and our librarian James. What they do, and it's 72 mouths to feed. Now, 18 of the high school students go off to boarding school, which is not a luxury in Kenya. It's a necessity, and the education is a little better. And so so they're not always staying on site, but it's the young children who are. And this tea field, if all goes well, will feed them for the other months that the churches can't take care of them. So this is, you know, one of that old story, don't give a man a fish, but if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. If you teach him how to fish, you'll feed him for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And that's what you've done, and you've done a great job and a great service to them. If you're just tuning in, we've been talking to Susan Kantz, the founder of the nonprofit organization In the Light, and has also launched a line of jewelry called Everyday Missions Jewelry. We want to turn there now. Tell us about this initiative and why you started it and what you hope it's going to contribute to your work in Kenya.
Well, when I would come home from Kenya, every year I would get home, take a few days enjoying my family that I was home, and then want to be back in Kenya.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's really where my mind and heart is every day. And while I was home, while there are still projects and work to do with the nonprofit, how could I contribute to raising more funds? I struggle with my personality type to be a very forward person on social media and things, and so I don't have a big net cast for for contributors for the nonprofit and things, and we're all very small. There's three of us on the board right now, and so we look to expand, but that's where we are right now, and so there's a lot of work there to do, but it didn't seem like enough. I felt very being urged to do more. And I was having conversation with my good friends and my husband and saying, you know what, what else can I do? And my husband said to me, why don't you do your jewelry? You know, you've always just done it as a hobby. And I have. I've made jewelry for many years and just really enjoyed, the creativity of it. I am a very creative person. And it connected with Kenya because my very first year in Kenya, that's a really important trip. We were at a school, not an orphanage, and a little boy came over to me, and he had a little blue plastic beaded bracelet, and he asked if he could give it to me. And it really touched my heart. He had so little, and yet he wanted to give me a gift. And the next year I went back, I had made hundreds of little bracelets made from tiny little rubber bands. It was a very big fad in the United States at the time. So I had some friends and their children all making bracelets for me to take. And to this day, every child who goes through and does the music program with me when we travel, at the end we make sure to get a little bracelet made out of these colorful rubber bands. And it's not about it being a bracelet. It's about a reminder that they are loved and cared for by people all over the world, and most importantly by God. And that's just the little reminder that we try to give them. And so jewelry and the expression of creativity through jewelry is something I've done for a long time. And all of the women that we used to go on the mission trips, I would make bracelets for just as a gift, just as a gift. And he said, why aren't you doing that more regularly? I had such a good response from many of the people who've gotten them, and they love them, and they wear them all the time. And I thought, okay, let me look into this. And so I started the business Everyday Mission Jewelry. Every day, because it is not diamonds and rubies. That's not my style. I'm a very casual, comfort-driven person. And so it is, I would wear every single day. and mission, because of, that's the whole purpose. 100% of the proceeds go to the nonprofits, In the Light Ministry and Purpose Quest International for the orphans. And so the jewelry business has started and launched. And I'm learning as I go. I'm learning all kinds of new techniques. I love to learn new things. And so I'm forever on YouTube learning some kind of new stitch to bead weave, which is a new thing. Yeah, I used to just string jewelry. Now I'm learning to bead weave and loom work. And I'm learning to do Chinese knotting. And it really, really, really interesting. I'm really enjoying it. And I know it's where I need to be, because, as you've said before, you can spend, it's what you love, working. And I can spend hours in my studio creating, and it feels like I've only been here in moments, and it's 11 hours later.
Yep. That's what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's definitely at the right place to be.
Yeah. What kind of beads do you use?
So I use many kind of beads, from tiny little glass beads made in the Czech Republic, Japanese seed beads, and I use a special bead made in Kenya from Kazuri Beads. The business has been established for many years, and it is mostly single mothers and widows who are hand-forming beads from clay, firing them in the kilns, and hand-painting them. And so I get to go over, and we always make a stop at Kazuri, and I shop and I buy all kinds of beads and great colors and shapes, from little giraffes to a normal round, you know, bead, typical bead. When someone thinks of bead, they think of a round shape. And I bring them back, and I use them in a lot of my jewelry. And I make sure that I let everybody know that they are bought from Kenya, hand carried home very carefully. So I'm really happy to support that ministry, because by supporting that business and those women and their personal economies, then the proceeds of the jewelry that I can sell here goes right back to Kenya. So it's like a full circle. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah. And what is your strategy for marketing your beads? I know you just launched a website, but you have another interesting concept of how a listener could perhaps get in touch with you and support the work in Kenya through your jewelry or your jewelry sales.
The original concept was to do home parties, was to go into homes and talk about the ministry and what all the proceeds are for, and really the education, once again, to just let people know what these kids' lives are really like. And so many people, once they know, immediately want to help. There's such wonderful hearts of people who just want to reach out and help. But if you don't know, you don't know. So I would go in and do home parties, and that really was the basis of the whole business. And then COVID-19 happened, and that changed everything for me. And I thought, well, okay, I'm going to have to learn a new way. This is going to have to be totally different from anything I had foreseen. And so I am a creative person, and computer work is challenging for me. I can do it. I'm smart, but it's slow and it's monotonous for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to come up with, yes, you've got a new challenge. And it's not how to do a new stitch or a new bead weave. It's how to create a website. And so I spent 2 months, and I created it myself. And it just launched. It's everydaymissionjewelry.net. And I've had great, great success because of social media. On Facebook, I've been able to advertise a little bit, and I'm about to, and this afternoon I have a marketing meeting to do some more of that on Google and on Facebook. So social media is a unfamiliar and uncomfortable place for me, but it is a tool I am learning to use for the sake of these kids, so that we can get the word out and get more people to know what's going on and to help. So that's been a new path for Everyday Mission. Not in the not in the beginning plans, but it's been a new path. Yeah.
Very good. And now on the page for this show on Blog Talk Radio, /John Stanko, on the page for this show, I have highlighted in pink, that's how it comes up, I didn't choose the color, if we're in the light, your ministry, the people can click on and go to learn more about In the Light, and of course they can donate there to your work. If they're interested in the everyday mission jewelry, I also have that highlighted, and it's everydaymissionjewelry.net, but they don't even have to know that, just click there, it takes them right to your website, which is very well done, very colorful, very easy to use, very clear, and so we just pray the Lord's blessing on both those entities, In the Light and Everyday Mission Jewelry. So we've got just 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. What's next? I mean, again, COVID has changed everything, but what's in your heart? What would you like to still do in Kenya? And certainly the needs are there. What do you see?
I still feel very connected to Kinduyiwa Orphanage, and there's still work there to be done. There is still work and help with electricity, and if that's more solar panels and more batteries and things, because we need light and we need, you know, to be able to function throughout the evening. And security, there's a new, we need a better fence around the compound so that the children are safe at night. And we need a new tractor to help get water up and down that very difficult mountain. They have a very old tractor, and it, so there is still definitely work there to be done. There are some new bathrooms that really need built for the boys. Their bathroom has collapsed, and that's making it very difficult every day to function. So there is definitely work there still that God has put in front of me to say, one step at a time. And I, interestingly, when we've gone in the past, sometimes it can feel overwhelming. There's so much need. There's so much to be done. But I really feel at peace with Kinduyiwa. I just feel that God is saying, one step at a time. We'll take it one step at a time. And he just brings one thing, and I just follow my heart of love and do what I can that and use the gifts he's given me. So, yeah, I feel like,
Go ahead.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to say, we can't replicate what we have here over there. We wouldn't want to. It would be irrelevant for them. And so, you know, the tendency sometimes is to go over and fix everything, you know, and they don't need a flat screen TV, you know, they don't need a large screen TV, but they do need mattresses. They need access to water. They do need some electricity. They do need some security. And you don't know those things till you go. And you've gone, you've beheld firsthand. You've paid your dues, and it's just a delight to watch you in action as you embrace your purpose and the sphere that God has given you. And again, want to thank you for the work that you do on behalf of our partners, and it is an honor and a privilege to partner with you, and keep up the good work, and we'll talk again soon.
We will, and we'll be partnering this year to work on a separate orphanage, because there's going to be some new needs coming up there, and In the Light is looking forward to always working with Purpose Quest for God's purpose for us together. So thanks so much.
Yes.
Enjoy talking to you.
Yeah, give my love to everybody, and I know we'll be talking soon. Care.
We will. Bye-bye, my
bye-bye.
Friend.
All right, Susan Kantz, again, go to the page for the show and click on In the Light to learn more about her ministry and Everyday Mission Jewelry to learn about how you can support it. Well, that wraps it up for today. On Wednesday, we're going to have Proverb Newsom back on after technical difficulties last week from Urban Youth Impact down in West Palm Beach, Florida, and then Bishop Jeffrey Williams on Friday from Providence, Rhode Island. This is John Stanko signing off for another day, another episode. Until I'm back with you again, you be about the work of purpose in your life. So long for now.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.